everybody. We got a good crew here this evening. Interested to hear about Daniel. And that's a good thing. That's a really good thing. Guys, did y'all play today? How'd you do? Y'all won 11-1. Well, good deal. Good deal. Yeah. They're going to clap for you. Yeah. Who'd y'all play? Rose State. Y'all were scheduled to play Thursday, but it was raining at the time that y'all were supposed to play, so I didn't go out there. So I didn't figure y'all would be playing, but yeah. Well, we're sure glad that you are here today with us as we start our study on the book of Daniel. And this is going to be an interesting study. The first few weeks is going to be a lot of history. Okay, so just get ready. If you don't like history, well, tough it out, okay? Because we're gonna throw some history at you. I'm going to throw some dates at you. I'm going to throw what was going on at the time that this book was written at you. And you're going to get some really good historical information. And that's going to be the first few weeks of covering this book. I don't think any book in the Bible, and folks, I'm a big believer in this. I don't think any book in the Bible can be totally understood unless you know what's going on at the time of the writing of that book. Because if you don't know what's happening, then you can't rightfully apply it. And so that's why... the first few weeks we're going to be talking about this because mainly we're going to be talking about the Babylonian Empire. And we're going to be talking about all those things that are taking place and all those things that took place. And we're going to be talking about Israel in captivity during that time frame, because that's when this is written, while Israel is in captivity. And so one of the things that we need to understand is exactly what's taking place, who's in charge, what's going on, so that we know and we can rightfully divide the word to understand it. And once we understand the word, and again, this is in every book of the Bible, once we understand the word, then you can apply it to yourselves, and then you can apply it to others. But if you don't understand the word from the very beginning, then you can't do this. That can't happen. Now, I have a question for you. And give me a show of hands. How many of you here tonight have actually done a Bible study of just the book of Daniel? Raise your hand if you've done that. Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4. I have not. Okay? Do what? I'm in for a treat. There you go. I believe that also, that I'm in for a treat. I have not. And I don't mind telling you, I've read it. But I've never done an in-depth study of it. Okay? Just like on our Tuesday nights that we have, when we're talking about from Judges to Jesus, on our Tuesday night Bible class that we're doing there, I told y'all when we started that, I'd never done anything like this before. This was brand new, the way that I was doing it. Yes, I'd read all those books. Yes, I'd been there. I'd seen that, but I had never done an in-depth study of it. So this should be a treat to everybody. Should be. Because most of the time when you read about Daniel, you read about some very interesting things that happen in Daniel. You take little things out of it, and you read about those interesting things, and then you apply those interesting things. But then also, you read about it in the New Testament, like we just did in our supplement to Revelation, because Jesus says that this was written about in the book of Daniel that took place. And so, a lot of people tie that. A lot of people tie it to the book of Revelation because there is some imagery that's in Daniel that's very similar to the book of Revelation. And so in looking at that and seeing that, we kind of get an idea as to what's going on. Without the background, you cannot have that information. It just doesn't work. And so, like I said, we'll start with some background information on that, okay? That's for everybody's knowledge and everybody's wisdom so that you can take it and use it and apply it with wisdom and knowledge that God wanted us to apply it, okay? All right. Any questions before we begin? Yes, sir.
Hold it, Bob. To me, all I thought about Daniel's bunch of prophecies.
That's
what I've got from it.
Yeah. There are definitely some prophecies in Daniel. And like I said, you know, Jesus himself in Matthew 24 talks about some of those prophecies in Daniel. Daniel prophesied about the fall of Jerusalem in 70 A.D. There's no doubt in that because Jesus said that he did. So there's no doubt about that situation. So we know that that took place. So there is a lot of prophecies in there. We'll get to that in just a little bit and talk a little bit about that. There are a lot of prophecies in there. But one of the main things is that you see out of the main characters of Daniel, and some of you may not realize who the main characters are. Main characters are Daniel, of course. And then you have Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And you have King Nebuchadnezzar. Got one over here.
One thing I noticed about the book of Daniel is when Nebuchadnezzar renamed all of them.
Yes.
That we kept the Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego
right. Instead
of Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah.
Correct.
But Daniel
Correct. Kept
his name instead of Belshazzar.
Correct.
And I hope to get an answer to that question.
Well, there won't be much answers to that. I don't know why we kept it. Because Nebuchadnezzar did rename these people from their Jewish name to a Babylonian name. And that's where Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego come from. That was not their original names. But we keep that, and we talk about those a lot. And so that's kind of an interesting thing that that happens. And you don't really see that that I can think of anywhere else. You see some name changes. Paul is a good example. You know, he went from Saul to Paul. But past that point, you don't see that very often. Okay, we've got one over here. That's all right. You get one, and then we got one right here.
Someone asked me about that today.
There you go.
So, from a very young age, we teach kids a lot about a lot of the amazing stories in the Old Testament. Only when we want to dig deeper do you need the background? But a little kid can have the faith of so much if he understands the story of Daniel and the lion.
That's exactly
right. Or
there
was another in the fire, or of the flood. So I'm kind of disagreeing with your statement that
we have to
have a background, but
yeah.
Some people, if all they ever know about God is the stuff he did in the Old Testament and that leads to salvation, we got it.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, over here with Dick.
When these Nebuchadnezzar changed their names, he did change Daniel's name.
He did change Daniel's.
To Belteshazzar.
Yep, but we keep Daniel's name.
Yeah.
And we don't keep Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego's name.
No.
Yeah, so that's interesting too. One of the things that I want to mention about this is, you know, in the book of Revelation, one of the things that we talked about with that book was the main purpose of that book. Y'all remember the main purpose? It was to give them hope. That was hope, okay? And the main theme of the book was that if you remain faithful, you win in the end. So you have hope there. You have that hope of salvation. You have hope that God's going to avenge those people who were being persecuted at the time. So that was that. Now here, as Judy brought up right there, is the fact that this book is actually mostly about faith. Because you have great faith that is shown within these individuals that are in this book. So we can look at this as an example for all of us to follow. An example of great faith. Because they were in a bad situation too, just like they were in Revelation. And the bad situation that they were in was that they were in captivity. Babylon had overthrown Jerusalem, had overthrown Israel, and all of Israel was in captivity at the time. Okay? So, seeing that and understanding that, these individuals still had tremendous faith. Tremendous faith. Go ahead.
One of the great sayings, I guess, of Daniel, faithful sayings, I would say, is to me in this book, is King's asking him about his God saving him. He said, "Oh King, my God can save me, but even if he don't, he is able to."
That's right. Yeah. And even if he doesn't, I still will not bow down to you. I still will not do these things. And so this is great faith. One of the things, too, that I pull out of this book as well, you know, you hear people all the time saying that we should always obey the laws of the land. Yes and no. Okay? As long as the laws don't go against God's word, then you betcha, we can obey them and we should obey them. We should be the citizens. So, you know, when it's 55 miles an hour around that little doodad right there, that little bit, yeah. When it's 55 miles an hour, you know, that doesn't go against God's word. So guess what? You need to obey that. Okay? You need to obey that. This is tax season. Pay your taxes. Okay? Now that doesn't mean that you don't take advantage of any kind of break that you get. But what that does mean is that if you owe taxes, you pay those taxes. I told you one time that I worked for one season with H&R Block. And oh my gosh, people would lie. I was shocked how much they would lie. And I'd say, you know, do you have any deductions? Oh, yeah, oh, yeah, oh, yeah. Well, what do you have? Well, I got my dog. And said, no, don't think so. Don't think that's going to work. I had one lady that came in one time that she was an elderly lady, and she had five grandchildren that she was raising. And she had all five of those grandchildren the year before. Well, their parents came back and took them back during that year that she was filing, so she didn't get to use them as a deduction. So I figured her taxes for her, and it turned out that she owed about $1,200, and she just about flew out the window. And I said, well, that's it. You don't have any deductions anymore. Those grandchildren are no longer living with you. They're living back with their parents. You don't get a deduction with those grandchildren. As a matter of fact, your grandchildren or your children use them on their taxes. And I said, you can't double dip with them like that. And oh, she threw a fit and she said, well, I'll just go somewhere else. Well, she did. She took her stuff. She left. She came back about a week later and went to a different one of our tax preparers. And she had all her grandchildren all of a sudden were her deduction. And I go, okay, that doesn't work right. Okay. Folks, what did Jesus say about taxes? Render to Caesar what is Caesar's and render to God what is God's. Okay? Period. Period. So, obey the laws of the land. You hear that all the time. But in this case, with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and with Daniel, you see two instances where they were told to do certain things that were against God, and they said, nope, we can't do that. We're not going to do that. Matter of fact, if somebody came in here right now today and told us that we couldn't worship here anymore, We might not worship here, but you know what? We're going to go worship somewhere. We're going to go do it. And nobody's going to stop us. Okay? Do what? That's right. Nobody's going to stop us. We're going to worship. So this is an interesting aspect because, yes, we are to obey the laws of the land as long as they don't go against God's laws, because God's laws are number one. Okay? God's laws are number one. Miss Sue has something for you. Well, say a lot.
That's the same thing that Peter told them. I think it was Peter when they were told to not be preaching the gospel.
Yeah.
He said, "Who are we to obey?"
That's exactly right. And that was Peter. And of course, that was the Jewish leadership that told them, said not to speak any more about this man, whom they crucified, by the way, not to speak any more about this man. And his response is, whether it is better to obey God or to obey man, judge ye. And, of course, it's better to obey God always, 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 always. Okay? So, this is an interesting book. There's nothing not interesting about it. You're going to see some interesting things as we go through it. And you'll have some questions and whatnot, and I'll try to answer them the best that I can. Okay? And that's how I put that. I'll answer them the best that I can, and sometimes I'll be right on the money, and sometimes you may think, oh, no, he doesn't know what he's talking about. Okay? All right. A lot of this that I'm getting from comes from the Truth for Today commentary, and that's why I've got that on there. That's a Truth for Today commentary that's put out by Harding University. And the reason why I like that more than anything is that Harding University, I do have 2 degrees from Harding University, and I know some of these people that are listed up there on the board that are part of this. That last one I know a little bit. But I know Neil Pryor up there. So these are all people from Harding University. These are all professors. These are intelligent people. The reason my name is up there is simply because that I add to some of the commentary that's on there. So I am a contributor to the commentary. But these are people that put this together. These are very intelligent people. Very sharp when it comes to knowledge of God's Word. Okay? So that's Truth for Today commentary. Now, Daniel is one of the most fascinating and popular prophets in the Bible. As Judy was bringing out, there's a lot of stories that are in the book of Daniel. You know, Daniel in the lion's den. There's a lot of stories that are in the book of Daniel that a lot of our young people especially hear about when they're very, very young. And so that makes it a very popular study, a very popular book to go to and to look at. The book of Daniel is the shortest of the major prophets, but stands as one of the most important books of the Old Testament. Yes, Miss Ann, you will live long enough to see the end of Daniel. Yeah. Yeah. It is the shortest of the major prophets that we look at. So, you know, it won't be a 2-year-long process. But we will be looking at this book, and we'll be going through it. And it is a very, very much a very popular book in the Old Testament. Chapters 1 through 6, I think somebody was asking about this just a minute ago. I think Bob brought this up. Chapters 1 through 6 contain stories of faith. Faith. And like I said, this book is primarily a story of faith. That's what it is. And so it's a story of faith that inspire people. And notice what it says there, throughout history. There are people in the Bible, all through the Bible, that I wish that I had as much faith as they did. Because I know I don't. I know I don't. Joni. There are people in the Bible, throughout the Bible, in both Old and New Testament, that put me to shame as far as their faith is concerned. Absolutely. Go ahead.
If I'm not mistaken, this is the only book that makes mention of a reference to the like of the Son of Man in the being present in something God is doing. Does that make sense? In the fiery furnace, they put three men in there and saw four.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, I got you. I got you. The question on that was it Jesus or was it an angel? And, of course, we'll get to that when we get to that. But there's a question there about that. Yes, Judy. Yeah, you're going to have to wait, Judy.
Do you really think that you don't have the faith that they had, or is it, do you don't think you would have been that courageous? Do they, I mean.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know what, I think I have that faith.
Yeah.
I just don't think I have the courage to do it, but I think I have the faith. I mean, I don't, you know.
I view myself just like the man whose son was the epileptic, and he had gone to all of the apostles and had asked the apostles to help him, and none of them could. Y'all remember the story? And then he finally gets in touch with Jesus. And Jesus says to him, "Do you believe that I can do this?" And his response was, "I believe. Help me with my unbelief." Now see, I see myself in that a lot. You know, that's a fault that I have. Is that I need help with my unbelief. Because there are times that I don't believe. I'll just tell you, there are times that I don't. I believe, just like that man, I believe that God can do it. But I need help with my unbelief. Now, what did Jesus do with this man? He indeed helped him with his unbelief, did he not? Because he did. Now realize that is not a sin per se, but it's just a lack of faith. And remember, if we have the faith of mustard seed, we can move mountains. Okay? But also remember as well the incident with Peter in the boat. Jesus is walking on the water, is in a storm. And Peter gets out of the boat and starts walking to Jesus. And then he sees the wind and the waves, and he begins to sink. Y'all know the story. And then he cried out to who? Jesus for help. And I always bring this up. He doesn't cry out to the 11 that were back in the boat. He cries out to Jesus because Jesus is the only one that can help him. Jesus is the only one that can save him. So he cries out to Jesus. And then when Jesus gets in the boat with him, what does he say about him? He says, "O ye of what? Little faith." Little faith. You know, if the apostles, who had great, wonderful faith, can also have little faith, then I can be there too. And we can all be there. And oftentimes my prayer is just like the man who had the son of that had epilepsy. My prayer is, God, help me with my unbelief. Help me with my little faith. Help my faith to grow. And every single time, I will tell you this, every single time, 100% of the time, my faith has always grown. Now, when my faith stops growing, it's when I see Jesus and God face to face. That's when I won't need it anymore because my faith will be turned into sight. I won't need that anymore. Does that make sense to everybody? Folks, we all fall short. And that's one of mine. Sometimes I wonder. Sometimes I struggle. And sometimes I ask God for help in that regard. And all of us should be willing to do that. Because all of us struggle from time to time. Okay? These stories of faith in chapters 1 through 6 provide examples of faith, courage, as Judy was bringing out, and the power of prayer. These three things right there are really what we need to pull from this book. Faith, courage, the power of prayer. Realize what God can do for you. God can shut the mouths of the lions. God can keep them from burning up in the furnace. All these things can happen because God is powerful enough to do it. And like Rendell brought up just a minute ago, even though, as Daniel says, even if he doesn't, he says, I know God can save me, but even if he doesn't, I still will not bow down. I still will not do these things that you're asking me to do. That's courage. That's faith. That's the power of prayer. All these things are extremely important for us to see in this book. In this book. Okay? All right, any questions before we go on? All right, let's take a look at chapters 7 through 12. Those are comprised of apocalyptic visions. This is what Bob was talking about right there. We see a lot of visions that Daniel brings up, Daniel speaks about, that are there for Nebuchadnezzar, they're there for us, they foretell the future that is going to take place. And notice what I says, sometimes these visions even challenge the advanced Bible scholars with exactly what they are. Now, this book often sees a controversial, this book is often seen as controversial to unbelieving people. If you don't believe in God and the power of God, this book doesn't work for you. Okay? But I can also show you a whole bunch of other books that don't work for you too, if you're in that situation. It emphasizes the biblical concept of God as omnipotent, omnipresent, omnipotent. Okay, whichever way you want to say it. Okay, like I told you before, I'm from Arkansas, and I can't talk about all that. We went to a church one time, and Kathy's already laughing because she already knows. This preacher gets up there, and we're at this church, and we went because we were invited to go by this little waitress that we got to know and got to love her and all this stuff down at Lake Washita. And she wanted us to come to their church. And I said, okay, you know, we'll come. So we come, and we go over there, and the preacher gets up there, and he starts off, and he says, God is big. God is big. And I said, okay. And then he said, God is big. And every time he'd say it, he'd get a little bit more excited. And he'd say, God is big. And then everybody in the audience starts cheering and clapping and raising their hands and all this stuff. And he just kept saying, God is big, God is big, God is big. And then he changed it one time and says, God is omnipresent. And I don't think he even knew what that meant. But that's what he said. And I can tell you right now, out of his 30-minute sermon, that's all he said. And I'm not even kidding you. And every time he said it, they got more excited. And my son was about 6 years old at the time. And he looks up at me and he says, "Dad, is he drunk?" I said, "I don't know, but he's gotten into something." Yeah, but I could do his whole sermon because that's all he said. That's all he said. And every time he said it, they got louder and louder and louder. And they started clapping and cheering and raising their hands. And they started pounding on the piano more and playing the drums more. And they got louder and louder. And that was it. That was the whole. And Kathy can correct me if I'm wrong, but that was it. No, he didn't do much studying. I can promise you he didn't do much studying. What this tells us is, which is quite simple, God is with you always. That's just that simple. God is with us always. Remember what Jesus told us in Matthew chapter 28, verse 20. Jesus says, "Lo, I am with you always, even until the end of the age." We will never be forsaken by God. God will always be with us. God is always around us. And because of that, because God being with us, God always around us, these men who have this great faith are showing how much faith they have because they know without a doubt that God is with them. God is with them. And sometimes we need to understand that, especially when we are dealing with times of trial and tribulation. That helps your faith grow, doesn't it? That helps you with your lack of faith. You have little faith. That helps that faith to grow in knowing that God is with us no matter what. He is always there. He's always with us. And sometimes we just need to take a step back and realize that God is with us. You realize how important that is? Because too often, we don't see God. And the reason why we don't see God is because we're not looking. If you open your eyes and look, you will see God. Go ahead.
Well, and every one of those prophecies were spot on.
You betcha. You betcha. And that's one of the things in chapter 7 through 12 that we will see, that every one of these prophecies in which Daniel writes about, every one of them, 100% of them, are exactly what happens, exactly what takes place. Okay? Every one of them. All right? It sets forth clear, predictive prophecy. And some are blunt, specific, and unmistakable. We can look back and we can see it. That these things happened exactly the way that Daniel said they were going to. Exactly. It is unapologetic, and it narrates miraculous events. Now again, if you don't believe in these things, this isn't going to be your book. But realize, God does these things. It asserts the total sovereignty of God. Remember on Wednesday nights, we're talking about right now the great I Am, where Jesus calls himself I Am multiple times. Remember who called himself I Am the first time? God did. God was the first. And where did he do it? With Moses or from the burning bush. And remember why that took place. Now, a lot of you have already heard this, but I'm going to tell it again to those who haven't. But remember why God said this. Moses was asking God a legitimate question. Moses had come out of Egypt. And Egypt had many gods. So when Moses asked God the question, "Who should I say sent me?" He's asking, which one of these gods in Egypt sent me? That's what he's asking. And God straightens him out. He says, I am. I am sent you. There is no other. I am God. I am the God of your fathers, the God of Jacob, the God of Isaac. I am sent you. And Jesus uses that same terminology when he talks about him being I am. Now, with that in mind, we must realize that in this book of Daniel, we will see how God's sovereignty, that he is the great I am. There is no other God. How his sovereignty overpowers all other earthly gods whom they're holding up. And so it's a very important statement to say that this book shows us the sovereignty of God. This book shows us the power of God. This book shows us that God is the great I am. Josephus, and I will be pulling Josephus multiple times. Joe has a book on Josephus. Very interesting to read. Josephus speaks of Daniel a lot. Now notice this. Josephus explains how studying the writings of Daniel and observing how his prophecies were fulfilled, just like what we talked about just a minute ago, in every way his prophecies were fulfilled, would be a faith-building experience. That's why I say, this book is about faith. That's what it's about. Josephus, the Jewish historian, writes, this is a faith-building experience. Read this book. Study this book. This builds your faith. That's what it'll do. He goes on to say, such a study would expose the error of the Epicureans who did not believe in God's sovereignty. And I've got the quote there from the Josephus writings. The book of Daniel requires careful study. And so just realize we're going to be taking it and requiring careful study. Okay? With emphasis on dreams and visions of unusual images and creatures, the book is often subject to strange interpretations. Like I said a minute ago, when you look at this book and you compare it with Revelation, you're going to see some of the same types of images. You will not see the exact image, but you will see some of the same types of imagery. Okay? So just realize that. They have meaning. They have special meaning. And so Daniel spends time talking about that imagery. Fortunately, Daniel, like John does in the book of Revelation many times, fortunately Daniel interprets some of these visions for us. Like I told you when we studied the book of Revelation, there will be times when we will read and it'll say, this is this. Daniel does the same thing. And where he says, this is this. This vision is this. And so there's no question about what it is. Now where people run into different interpretations oftentimes is because Daniel doesn't do that with all of them. But he does that with a lot of them. So anytime the book of Daniel says that it's this, then there's no debate. That's what it is. That's what it is. Okay. Rendell? Judy down here.
But God gave that to him.
Yes, of course. Of course. That's exactly where that comes from. A knowledge of history also helps us to understand correctly the prophecies in this book. And that's why I want to start out by looking at history. Okay? That's why I want to start out by looking at history. Okay? Like I said, if you don't like history, just suck it up. There will be a test. There will be a test. Okay. We want to start out by looking at the Neo-Babylonian Empire. It's what we're going to be looking at to begin with. Okay? The Babylonian Empire. Now, we'll be looking at this study at first with historical context. Again, I believe that you cannot understand fully any book in the Bible without first knowing what was taking place at the time of the writing of that book. That's the only way to truly understand it. So we will spend quite a bit of time talking about the writings of this book and the history that backs it. Okay? The Neo-Babylonian Empire began in 626 B.C. when the Chaldeans chieftain, now I'm going to get some of these names wrong, so just live with it, Nabopolassar captured Babylon and declared independence from Assyria. That's when this starts, in 626 B.C. Nabopolassar made an alliance with the Medes. And in 612 B.C., they captured the Assyrian capital of Nineveh. I knew that one. I just couldn't get it out. Okay, this image that I have up on the screen right here is the image of the original Neo-Babylonian Empire. Okay? Now take a look at that. You got the Tigris and Euphrates rivers. That is modern-day Iraq. Okay? You see where Babylon is. You see Babylon right there. All right? That is the initial Babylonian Empire. The Assyrian and their Egyptian allies were completely defeated in 605 BC by the general Nebuchadnezzar and the son of Nabopolassar. Daniel is first seen at the beginning of the captivity of Judah in Babylon, the period known as the exile. So we pick up the study of this at the time when Jerusalem, Israel, is under captivity by the Babylonian Empire. Okay? Now, go right behind you. All right, use it.
So, at this point where we're picking up in Daniel, at the beginning of Daniel, when Nebuchadnezzar takes Jehoiakim, is this... At this point, Nebuchadnezzar is considered king of Babylon.
Correct.
So, somewhere along the way, between 605 and this, Nabopolassar has died, and Nebuchadnezzar has become king, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Yep. And you'll see that here in just a minute. Josiah is the last good king of Israel, and had been killed by the Egyptians at Megiddo in 609 B.C. What is Megiddo? Okay. What is it? Armageddon. That's the place. There it is. Megiddo is where Armageddon is. Okay? Now, one of the things that you're going to see real quickly, notice those little dotted lines. Those are crossroads. Those are crossroads. And those crossroads right there make that area. Megiddo sits on top of a mountain. You're going to see some pictures of it here in just a minute. Megiddo sits on top of a mountain and overlooks those crossroads. Whoever controls Megiddo controls trade, controls those crossroads. And so this place changes hands multiple times. Isn't that right, Joe? Joe's been there, so I'm going to lean on Joe a little bit. And the pictures that I've got come from Joe. But I want you to see that this place, highly fortified, sits up on top of this mountain, and it controls all the trade north, south, east, west, if you control that area. So every major army in the world at that time wanted that, to control that area. Now here's some pictures. Whoops, skipped one. That's looking down from there. Now, one of the things, I think Joe told me this, and correct me if I'm wrong. One of the things is that they would conquer it. They would build their fortifications. Then the next group would come in and conquer them. And then a lot of times they'd build their fortifications on top of the fortifications that that had already been built. And then the next group would come in and they would conquer them and they'd build fortifications on top of that. And so you have multiple fortifications on top of this mountain. This is the overlook. This looks down in the valley there. Here it is, some of the fortifications that you'll see right there. And they are today still digging and finding more. As they go deeper, they find another fortification. As they go deeper, they find another fortification. Go ahead, Joe, give me some good information. Like I said, Joe's been there, and these are Joe's pictures. So,
actually, they've quit digging.
Have they quit?
They've gone down about four or five conquerings worth, and then I guess the Israeli government said, we're going to preserve this as antiquity here, and there's no more excavations going on, but it's probably about a dozen more levels.
Isn't that interesting?
Megiddo is one of the most conquered cities in the world.
Yes, yes. Because everybody wanted it.
Yeah.
And so the next big army that came through, they took it. And so it's one of the most conquered. Here's another one. Here's the gate going in. Okay? And so what Joe is saying is that they've gotten so far down, they've kind of quit digging. And that based upon what Joe's saying, that there could be another dozen more levels down further. Okay?
Yeah, Steve?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, they didn't, when they said that you said they built on top of it, they didn't tear down the old stuff, they filled it in.
There you go.
And then they built on top of it.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah.
They didn't tear down what they had conquered, they just filled it in and built on top of that. Which also made it a higher platform, which at that time, of course, makes it more difficult to take. So, that works. He took that picture on 3-6-2017, by the way. Josiah was succeeded by his son, Jehoaz, who reigned for a grand total of 3 months and was then deposed by Pharaoh Necho of Egypt. And that's in 2 Kings Do what? Did you? Well, good. That's in 2 Kings 23. The Pharaoh replaced Joaz with his brother Jehoiakim. Yeah, I'm not going to get the even right, so just hang in there. Okay? Now, he served Egypt, the Pharaoh, until 605 B.C. when Nebuchadnezzar defeated Egypt and Assyria at Carchemish. Okay. Like I said, I'm not going to get these words right, so y'all just going to hang in there. All right, I'm not sure if y'all can see that or not. Yeah, but now I'm gonna tell y'all this. I've got a couple of these. This is the Southern Kingdom. And if you've been coming on Tuesday nights, you've already seen this. But this is the Southern Kingdom and the kings that were there. And the next slide is actually the Northern Kingdom. All right. Go back to the way it was there. Okay, the next slide there, here's the Northern Kingdom, and here's all their kings. Now, the first thing I want you to look at is the character. See the character on there? Okay, again, that may be a little hard to see. Look at them. Mostly bad, mostly bad. Good, good, bad, bad. Devilish. How would you like to be a king that was called devilish? That's right. But she was not a good person. Mostly good, good, good. Wicked, among the best, among the worst. Bad, wicked, bad, bad. Now, notice number 16 right there. Okay? This is where this all begins, number 16. Okay? He was considered to be one of the last good kings. And then you go right under him, his son right there served how long? 3 months. You see that? Now, I've got images of this that I can give you if you would like, a little bigger than what you've got probably. But with these in mind, this gives you a breakdown of all these kings, and it tells you if they were good, if they were bad, if they were okay, you know, mostly good, mostly bad. But what you're going to see, especially in the Northern Kingdom right here, is that you got bad, 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 extra bad, worst of all. How about that one? Worst of all. Mostly bad, 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 bad. That ain't no good up there. Okay? Yeah. How would you like to be considered to be worst of all? Poor old Ahab, the Arab, king of the desert sand. You know, y'all know that one? Yes. It was according to their relationship with God as well as how they treated the people. If y'all have been coming to, those of you who have been coming to our Tuesday night class, know exactly what Samuel told the people of Israel when they wanted to have a king. And Samuel told them, said, if you go to a king, this is going to happen. This is going to happen. All these kings are going to be looking out for themselves. They're going to be trying to do things themselves. You know, I've even heard people say that we need a king here in the United States. No, we do not. Okay? No, we do not. Kings have a tendency to be very self-centered. They want things themselves. And even when they start out pretty good, most of the time they turn out pretty bad. Because it gets to the point it's all about them. Do we have one? Yeah. That's right. We've got a king. And you know what that king is? It's God. It's Christ. All right. Now, this is a good stopping point, and we're at our 7 o'clock mark. So this is a good stopping point for us right here with these kings. And I would encourage you to go back and look at them. But if you look at the southern kingdom, realize what we're talking about. We're talking about in this book that we are going to be covering. It starts at number 16 right there. Number 16. And then it goes down from there. Okay? That's number 16. And if you'd like me to make you some copies of this, I can do that also. A little bigger that you can look at. I don't know how well you can see it on the handout I gave. Can't see it very well. I'll make you some bigger copies. I'll have it for you next time when you come so that you can see that. But we're looking at number 16 right there on down. It don't get no better. That's exactly right. It don't get no better. You know, bad, wicked, bad, bad. Okay? So, again, this is a good stopping place. We'll stop there. I'll pick up there and continue on with talking about Babylon. And then from Babylon, we'll also go into some of these other nations that are around that are also causing great problems with Israel at that time as well. Okay? Questions, comments? Okay, y'all think this is going to be a good study? I think it will be. I think it will be. All right. Well, good deal. Well, I hope to see all of you back next week. All of you back and ready to go next week. Because we'll be kicking her off again next week, and we'll pick up right there with the kings, and we'll just keep on going. Okay? All right. Is there anyone here who needs to partake of the Lord's Supper? Guys, y'all need to partake of the Lord's Supper? Okay, you got it? Okay. Anybody else needs to partake of the Lord's Supper? All right. Just follow Rendell on back. He'll take care of you. Bring the mic up here. Yeah.